Hey everybody, welcome to another awesome episode of OEM TV. Once again, my name is Gavin Bowman and I'm a technical evangelist for Microsoft. Today, I'm joined with another Microsoftie, Peter Arulian. Did I pronounce that right, Peter?
You nailed it, man. Good job.
Oh, sweet, sweet. I'm known for butchering names. So Peter is a senior project manager on the Xbox team, and we've got some awesome stuff for you guys to talk about today. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to open things up. The first thing I want to talk about for all the PC gamers out there and people interested in PC gaming is Intel's new line of Broadwell E processors, right? What we want to know is why should I care as a gamer, or even as an enthusiast, right, for Broadwell E? What does this do for me?
Yeah, so just to kind of go back a step, the at Computex, Intel made this announcement around the Broadwell E. It's a high-performance 10-core. I think they have different configurations, but
yeah,
as much as 10 cores in this CPU. And it's exciting for gamers for a couple of reasons. It really kind of comes to life with the X12. For folks who aren't as familiar with our DirectX APIs, something that we've been investing in for a long time, with the X12, I sort of consider it a step change. You'll hear, or if you read in the ecosystem, you'll hear it described as riding closer to the metal. And what we've done, I think, is we've empowered developers, game developers, to do more with their titles. And so the pairing of DX12 with the Broadwell E is allowing for scaling across these 10 cores and utilizing all of this horsepower. So titles, and we're on the front end of that now for sure, but a title that we showcased at E3 from Stardock that uses the Oxide engine is Ashes of the Singularity. And they've actually, have you seen it?
Yeah, it's
awesome, pretty. Right?
Yeah.
and the good news with that title for folks who haven't seen it yet is they worked with Steam. They were part of their Greenlight program, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And they improved. They released and they've continued to add improvements. Going into E3, they did a bunch of work with Intel to show with a benchmark how they can scale across the 10 cores with the Broadwell E and show performance gains all the way up into that 10th core. I find that really exciting. And now there may not be a thousand games that are doing that yet, but the fact you've got Stardock doing that, it's phenomenal. And as we go along, I'll share more, but the just the fidelity benefits and the kinds of like sort of graphic delight you can get by using that much processing power is pretty compelling.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I do think this starts to spell a new beginning for PC gaming, right? And PC game development as a whole, right? Parallelization, writing code that works on so many different cores is not trivial, right? But we're starting to figure that out. And DirectX 12 is supposed to help me do that as a developer, right? So that's kind of killer.
Yep.
But for the gamer that wants to be able to just kill it now, right? Usually, excuse me, I'm having a brain fart. Usually, your bottleneck isn't your CPU, if you've got a pretty capable one, right? Usually it's the GPU. So if I've got, you know, an awesome GTX 1080, why would I still want a Broadwell E? I mean, obviously there's Ashes of the Singularity, but like you said, you know, not every title is optimizing for the CPU yet. So what other needs could I be filling with a 10-core, like, ridiculous CPU like this?
Well, one of the big components of DX12 is what we call asynchronous compute, and it's the ability for the sort of dual optimization of what's happening in the CPU and the GPU. Historically, the commands that are being generated and then show up on the GPU are sort of serialized. DX12 sort of disaggregates those and allows them to kind of go down together. So now if you've got, on the one side, you've got your CPU doing this work and can do it across multi-cores, and DX12 is enabling all of these commands to show up and take advantage of the aggregate power of all of the GPU. You know, you have these, it's like this is probably a bad metaphor, but you've got like this team of oxen who are pulling together, and they can do more work at the same time. So, you know, there may not be a host of games having done the work so far to leverage DX12 to utilize all the cores. But I think what happens is you have someone like Stardock who creates the showcase, as they've done with Ashes, and shows you. Like at E3, this is going to show kind of my geeky side, but they have these explosions that can take place, and who doesn't love a good explosion? And at the
end
of the...
I'm a big fan of Michael Bay myself for that reason.
Oh, yeah. See? We should talk about Michael Bay. I just watched a movie recently and likened it to Michael Bay, and my friend shot me down. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. You know, with the fireworks, there's those fireworks that explode, and then at the tail end, as each of the little parts is falling, they explode again, you know, and you get this extra flare.
Sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, Ashes, it does this, and it specifically, when you watch the demo, they show that the reason they're able to do this much deep sort of fidelity and this many, like, thousands and thousands of parts moving on the screen is because of this 10 core and marriage of it with DX12. So, I mean, it's something that a gamer might not note if I didn't point it out to them, but a developer can then just say, like, they can find these ways to sort of add definition and delight to their title that just weren't possible before.
Right, yeah, no. When you give a developer freedom to actually sort of build out those experiences they want to build, right? Game development in a lot of instances is all about compromise, right? What can I do now for the hardware we have today, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I love that. I love that example. Another thing for titles that may exist now, I'd like to point out that, you know, 10 cores, even for like a Left 4 Dead, right? Or maybe a Skyrim that may not utilize all those cores inherently, you still have room for other things. So right now, like a lot of gamers, Twitch is huge, right? But you usually need a machine for gaming and another machine for streaming, right? But
that's exactly those, right.
Yeah. Those extra cores give me that ability to sort of, you know, turn my machine into an all-purpose machine, even while I'm gaming. So that's one of my favorite things about it. That's why I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be great. So
what you're describing there, you know, I've heard folks in the industry call it megatasking.
Megatasking.
it's a total marketing term. You should forget it immediately. But the thing about it is a gamer, you know, not all of them, but some of the gamers, they want this experience with the titles that has this sort of depth of field and this depth of fidelity. And this realism with so many moving parts, and they want it to, you know, to feel real, or they just want the AI to behave as though it was actually AI. At the same time, they want to be able to do broadcasting, and they want to be able to do game capture. And so that's why megatasking. They're like doing these things that really require, when you put them, you know, daisy chain them, a ton of power to do. Something like the Broadwell E, you know, brings that to life in a way where others have to chug to get that same, to keep those things running on time.
Hit the encode button and wait 30 minutes, maybe get a snack, think about life decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, so the snack thing is important.
definitely. So DX12 is huge for us, right? We launched it last July. It's our latest graphics API. And we've had more adoption with DX12 than any other version of DirectX, right? So that does spell promise for, you know, then if I were to go and buy a Broadwell E right now, I would have to worry about, well, are games coming out next year even going to take advantage of this? And the fact that DX12 has been announced and people are actually using it, developers are actually adopting it, sort of, you know, spells promise for me as a consumer. Question for you, and this is sort of a curveball, how does this compare to a Vulkan, right, which is supposed to be this awesome open source graphics API? So what's the difference? Why should I care as a gamer or even as a developer? What am I looking forward to, and how does DX compare?
Well, some of these things I described, I think that DX12, you know, kind of does in a way that we really, really like. It has this asynchronous compute, so we have this ability to harness all the power. One of the things I like a lot about DX12 is what we call explicit multi-GPU support. So there has been for a long time in the industry multi-GPU support with proprietary protocols from a lot of the silicon partners, and that's great. It means that you can pair a couple of GPU cards in a system and get some of the benefits of that. One of the things that DX12 does, and we don't market it with this term, but explicit multi-GPU support means that you can take GPU cards from different manufacturers and pair them together in the same device, So it, let's imagine you've got a really great Radeon card, but the 1080 from NVIDIA is just out, and you'd really like one. DX12 says, you know what? It's okay that they're not from the same manufacturer. You can go ahead and put it in your rig, and I will look at them both and use all the horsepower. Now, we still require, like, the developer's got to do work to make sure that's true, but using the same example with Ashes of the Singularity, you can go on YouTube right now, and they literally, without any cutaways, they show you how they take a card, stick it in a rig, two disparate brands and manufacturers, and make them work together, and they show a benchmark where the performance gain is just amazing. So now, like, you can just tell a consumer, don't throw away the investment you have on the card you already own. Just buy whatever card is new that you love. And we're going into a future where developers will go and write using DX12 so that consumers, like, it truly is consumer choice.
Yeah, yeah, platform agnostic. That's insane. So I'm going to be honest with you, Peter, as a PC gamer, what you're spelling out to me is computational blasphemy. I don't think that's a thing. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I love that term.
Computational blasphemy. Yeah, you can use it. It's fine. I'm a genius. It's okay. Yeah, no. So
trademark.
I can take a Radeon, an AMD card, put it next to an NVIDIA GTX whatever from whatever year, different versions of, different amounts of video RAM, and they'll work.
Yeah.
With, oh my gosh, that's amazing. That's
yeah,
amazing.
I wish I had it here. Maybe we'll get it and queue it up when we roll this. But Stardock released a video on this earlier this year where they show doing this exact thing. So, you know, I think it will become the norm where developers will say, because what a great thing to tell a consumer is, you know what, buy whatever card you want next. Don't throw away the card you own. And our game is going to make good use of all of that horsepower so you have a great experience. And they can do that because of the work that Microsoft's done with DX12 with Windows 10. And that's work a platform should do, right?
So. Agreed. Yeah, I love the agnosticism component. I love the fact that it allows me to make my system as modular as I want it to be, right? I'm kind of looking at my PC right now. It's like, how would you even look with an AMD card in you with NVIDIA? I don't even know. I kind of just want to do it. I kind of just want to see.
See?
That's incredible. We're
broadening minds.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Broadening minds and breaking some hearts. I feel like this is going to be game changing.
Yeah. And there have been some exciting announcements this year, I think, from both NVIDIA and AMD on the GPU side. Like, everybody saw the 1080 and like, it's screaming awesome. There's the 1200 that got announced, which seems insane.
Yeah.
AMD, oh. Right? Yeah, to fan yourself a bit. AMD came in with some really, really price-valued mid-tier cards.
The RX 480, is it?
Yeah. And then you have scenarios where you say, okay, well, it's not a 1080 maybe in performance. It's not playing in that stratosphere. But I can afford two of those.
Yeah, easily. Right,
and you put those in, and maybe you can even afford two of those cheaper than you can afford another card, and you get the performance gain that's as good or better. Then you couple that with DX12 that says, you know what, I don't even have to worry about proprietary protocols. Games are just going to run against whatever GPU I stick in my rig.
I see a core, like I use the core.
Yeah.
Well, so is the concept of SLI and Crossfire, are these even things to DX12? Does the API even care about those?
Sure. Sure. Okay. Like it will still be true that Windows will, you know, we'll play nice with those. We're going to work with those. We'll support them. Games will support them. You know, we want for consumers who are either brand loyalists or that's the configuration they have, we want them to be successful. Absolutely. We just, like, I know it sounds passe, but this idea of consumer choice, and it's a platform that enables scenarios that are as broad as possible, we said, let's not only make DX12 more powerful with things like asynchronous compute, but let's provide this ability for a consumer to use cards, like whatever cards, and pair them together so that the PC really is that open platform that I think is one of the reasons that PC gamers love it.
That's awesome. That is killer. And for those that may not know, right, just to sort of define async compute, a little clearly, and can correct me if I'm wrong. That's just the ability to take threads, instructions, and run them concurrently, right? So it just allows you to do a lot more at the same time. So that's a game changer as well. Awesome. Peter, you've answered all my questions and sort of given me some homework to do of my own. I'm not going to lie to you. Is there anything else you want the viewers to know about DX12, about Broadwell Lee, and the future of PC gaming?
Well, I mean, obviously the big thing that's on the horizon is VR. Seems like the industry is chasing VR. The good news is that in the same way that we've talked about Windows being, we think the best, you know, the best open platform for gaming, DX12 is evolving to support all of the partners who want to go and build VR experiences on top of it. So nothing to sort of disclose or announce today, but just know that we're investing in the future of gaming scenarios that are, you know, the things that are very topical now, and some of the things that are even like a step past that. And DX12 will continue to be, you know, one of the places we invest and innovate to enable those kinds of gaming experiences.
That's awesome. That's killer. And VR, I know, has a very, I mean, for the player themselves, right, there's a very small area, margin of error you can have before you run into things like nausea, right? Or in my case with the first Oculus, you know, straight up vomiting. Sadness. Yeah. So, you know, there are some performance minimums you have to meet, right, as opposed to standard gaming. And so, you know, you're saying you won't throw that out now, right? It's not something you guys are going to give up now. But whatever you guys are working on under the hood, it's going to be awesome, and it's going to help me, like, not puke. Is that?
I don't know if I can make a non-puke commitment.
I need a non-puke commitment, Peter.
I will say this about VR, because it's such a thing. It wasn't until I personally did the Minecraft Oculus demo. I don't know if you've done that one.
I've seen it. I haven't done it. It's awesome.
What happens when you have a really good VR demo is it goes from the theoretical thing that you talk about or read blogs about to understanding how this really could be an innovative gaming experience. Things like jumping off a cliff and having that dropping in your stomach, just like you would if you actually did that. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things are real. It's why you probably had your puke experience.
Yeah.
So I say that only because that's the moment for me that VR became something that went beyond, you know, a very niche sort of maybe tech demo to, okay, if they can crack this in terms of great gaming experiences, and I think also, too, we're going to hopefully get to a price point that is palatable to a, you know, more consumers.
We're getting there. Yeah, we're slowly getting there. You're starting to see indie game developers finally be able to say, oh, I can afford this thing. I'm going to go buy it, and we can get it out there, and more consumers are starting to hop on the bandwagon. But you're right, the price point is, you know, for I always think of myself like 3 years ago, the price point for a dorm college room gamer, you know, who's like got his graphics card literally duct taped to his motherboard, might be a little rough at this point in time, but we're getting there. We're seeing a lot of cost effective options, which is great.
It'll keep coming down for sure. And you make a good point there with the indie comment, because I think we'll see a lot of the early adoption and innovation from the indie community for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. These guys are, I love indie game developers. They're insane. They have no lives, and they're okay with it. and they're just so willing to jump on cutting edge. So
yeah, that's right.
It's great for them.
That's right.
Well, Peter, thanks again for joining us. And to all the viewers out there, thank you guys again for checking in on another awesome episode of OEM TV. Be sure to hit up these links at the bottom for more information on the topics we talked about today. And you guys have yourselves a great day.